The headlines: Baghdad is calling for a UN Security Council resolution urging Turkey to withdraw its military forces from all Iraqi territory. Railways in the UK come to a standstill as workers strike over pay, job security, and working conditions. And the United States says Russia's decision to leave the International Space Station in a few years is unfortunate. Our top story for this half hour: Iraq has asked the UN Security Council to adopt a resolution requiring Turkey to withdraw its military forces from Iraq's territory. Baghdad's request came days after 9 people were killed in artillery strikes in northern Iraq blamed on Turkey. Iraqi Foreign Minister Fuad Hussein, in an address to the Security Council, called on the UN body to form an independent team to investigate the attack. Members of the Security Council earlier condemned the attack, which took place in Duhok province of Iraq's semi-autonomous Kurdistan region. Iraqi authorities believe that the attack on civilians was carried out by Turkish forces. However, Ankara says its forces did not attack civilians. Turkey has launched a new operation against Kurdish militants holed up in the northern Iraq since April. Elsewhere, the U.S. Justice Department is conducting a criminal probe into the actions of former President Donald Trump to overturn the results of the 2020 elections. U.S. media are citing sources as saying that federal prosecutors are questioning former White House officials about Trump's involvement in last year's deadly riots at the Capitol. A congressional committee has been holding its own hearings into the incident. The committee says that Trump should be held accountable for a dereliction of presidential duty, but the panel of senators does not have the power to bring criminal charges against Trump. Therefore, any investigation by the Justice Department into the former president's personal role is very significant. Trump, however, has denied the accusations, calling them total fiction. Russia says it's planning to leave the International Space Station after 2024 as tensions between Moscow and the West escalates over the conflict in Ukraine. The announcement was made by the new head of Russia's space agency, Yuri Borisov. He said Moscow intends to build its own orbiting outpost. He, however, noted that Russia will fulfill all its commitments to its partners in the International Space Station until 2024. The United States has reacted to the plan, calling it an unfortunate development.
It's an unfortunate development, given the critical scientific work performed at the ISS, the valuable professional collaboration our space agencies have had over the years, and especially in light of our renewed agreement on spaceflight cooperation.
I understand. Price also referred to the soured ties with Moscow, saying although the relations are fundamentally changed, the U.S. still likes to preserve relations in some aspects, including scientific pursuits. The confirmation of the long-mooted move comes as tensions between the Kremlin and the West have mounted over the Ukrainian conflict. The U.S. and its Western allies have imposed several rounds of devastating sanctions against Russia, including its space sector. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says Russia is using gas prices to terrorize Europeans and deserves to face tougher sanctions.
Among other things, the engineered increase in gas prices to above $2,000 for 1,000 cubic meters on European markets. This is enough of an experience to broaden sanctions against Russia, as it is clear to everyone that this is intended Russian price terror against Europeans. Using Gazprom, Moscow is doing all it can to make this coming winter as harsh as possible for the European countries. Terror must be answered. Impose sanctions.
Russian energy giant Gazprom is planning to reduce gas supplies to Germany to a fifth of capacity, citing equipment troubles. But European officials believe Moscow is in fact seeking to inflict more pain on Europe for supporting Ukraine. On Tuesday, the EU member states agreed to decrease natural gas consumption by 15% in a bid to reduce dependence on Russian energy ahead of the cold winter months. And a powerful earthquake has rattled northern Philippines, causing damage to many buildings. At least 4 people are confirmed dead and dozens of injuries. have been reported. The 7.1 magnitude quake sent panicked residents rushing into the streets. It has damaged buildings, including heritage sites in Abra and nearby provinces, and caused landslides in some areas. The tremor was even felt more than 300 kilometers away in the capital, Manila, where several buildings were evacuated. Earthquakes are common in the Philippines, but this one was the strongest to hit in years. Seismologists say big aftershocks are expected. Palestine sympathizers have stormed a firm known for producing parts for Israeli drones and other weaponry in retaliation for Israeli regime aggression against Palestinians in the West Bank. Palestine Action have claimed responsibility for the protests, which saw property belonging to the arms firms damaged and activists detained. Robert Carter headed to the scene to report on the latest.
A UK-based Israeli arms manufacturer has been raided once again by Palestine supporters, who claim to have inflicted significant damage on the property. The building belonging to UAV Engines was hit last Sunday as part of a wider campaign by Palestine Action activists to harass and hamper the activities of the international arms firm Elbit Systems.
Palestine Action claim that their latest direct action was in retaliation to Israeli regime attacks on the Palestinian city of Nablus in the West Bank on Sunday morning, killing at least two Palestinians and injuring many more. The group also vows that as long as Israeli aggression against Palestine continues, so will their campaign targeting not just Israeli arms manufacturers in the UK, but also their partners as well.
Following Sunday's action, supporters gathered to protest outside UAV's gates in solidarity with the activists who were detained following the direct action.
The drone parts that are made here are used, are tested on the captive population of Gaza. We know that these drones have killed people, and we're here today to stop the arms trade overall, but specifically against Elbit.
Palestine Action have always said, if you continue with this violence against the Palestinian people, then we will retaliate, we will resist, we will come back, we will shut down your factories.
The attack by Israel on Nablus is a common occurrence across occupied Palestine. The lack of action by Western powers to rein in Israeli aggression has inspired more aggressive activism. Palestine Action say their relentless raids have successfully forced the closure of two Elbit sites in London and Oldham. A spokesperson for Elbit acknowledged the incident, claiming it was an attack by a violent group. Although no one was harmed during the raid, Palestine Action's sites remain squarely fixed on UAV engines, so locals can expect more of the same scenes going forward. Robert Carter, Shenstone.
Well, Muslims across the world are preparing to mark the martyrdom anniversary of the third Shia Imam. Imam Hussein, Afghanistan is widely welcoming the occasion too. Rahmatullah Balban reports from Kabul.
Several days ahead of the lunar month of Muharram, people in Afghanistan are preparing to mark the martyrdom anniversary of the third Shia Imam and grandson of the Prophet Muhammad, Imam Hussein. On Kabul streets, people have held Muharram exhibitions, where they provide necessities for mourning rituals.
We have been holding such Muharram affairs for more than 20 years. We deploy necessities for mourning ceremonies across Afghanistan. However, Muharram always has its own prosperity, but this year it is very different for our people. As we see, people are set to mark a widespread and more passionate Muharram.
Afghans also turned the mosques and public religious places black to express the emotion of grief on the martyrdom anniversary of their third Imam.
We are preparing to hold Muharram mourning ceremonies in Abul Fazl Shrine. The servants and lovers of Imam Hussein are decorating here with black as an old Afghan religious culture. God willing, we will host a sizable population of mourners during Muharram days, especially in Ashura.
With the Taliban responsible for ensuring security, Afghan Muslims, especially Shias, hope that they can hold their festivities in a peaceful space.
As you know, in the past years, there were security threats, especially by the Daesh terrorist group. Now that the invasion has ended and the Taliban are in power, I hope they tighten the security in advance and provide a safe ground for Muharram mourners across the country. They should cooperate and engage with the people and mourners to foil evil schemes.
Muslims around the globe largely commemorate the Battle of Karbala to keep the spirit of resistance and fight against arrogance alive. They also honor Imam Hussein's sacrifices, renewing allegiance with his ideals.
Every year, millions of people in Afghanistan passionately mourn the martyrdom of Imam Hussein during the month of Muharram. Now here in the capital city of Kabul, preparations are underway for large processions. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Iran has once again foiled an Israeli act of sabotage. Earlier this week, the intelligence ministry released a statement saying it arrested members of the terrorist group affiliated with Israeli spy agency Mossad. The terror plot adds fuel to the existing tensions that Tehran says could backfire on Israel in terms of security.
Israel has a history of either attempting to or conducting acts of terrorism in Iran. But more often than not, Tehran successfully discovers and prevents such attacks. On Saturday, Iran's intelligence ministry issued a statement saying that members of a terrorist group affiliated with Mossad were identified and arrested by Iranian security forces before they could take any action to carry out acts of sabotage. The ministry added that terrorists who were in contact with Mossad agents through one of the neighboring countries had sneaked into the country while carrying highly explosive bombs. Later, reports emerged that the espionage planned to blow up a sensitive facility in the central Iranian province of Isfahan. This, however, isn't the first time Israel had planned on carrying out acts of terrorism in the Islamic Republic of Iran. Iran's intelligence ministry forces had also captured individuals linked to Mossad in April. The spies were involved in disseminating classified information and documents. In July, Iran arrested another network of agents while they were carrying a large cache of weapons and ammunition with the intentions of provoking riots and terror inside the country.
Earlier in March, Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps foiled yet another Israeli act of terror. The Islamic Revolution Guard Corps said it stopped an imminent Israeli plot to sabotage the Fordow uranium enrichment plant.
Israel has, however, conducted a few terrorist acts against Iran over the past years, namely the murder of top Iranian scientists and army generals and acts of sabotage on nuclear sites. Yet, interestingly enough, the regime continues such atrocities without being held accountable by the international community, and more specifically the U.S., who has supported Israel through its veto power in the United Nations Security Council.
The impunity with which Israel carries out such attacks, or in this case, makes such plans, is fully enabled by the United States of America, which at this point, I believe, should be deemed responsible for the crimes and the destabilization that the apartheid state of Israel engages in. The primary way that the United States enables the crimes and the destabilization of Zionism and the colonialist apartheid state of Israel is through its veto in the United Nations. Since 1972, the United States has vetoed 53 resolutions attempting to hold Israel to account by way of international law.
Israel also has a track record of assassinating Iranian nuclear scientists. That's in addition to acts of sabotage on a section of Iran's nuclear facility in the city of Karaj. These are actions that threaten the entire region, yet the regime accuses Iran of destabilizing the region.
Israel has been involved in a string of sabotage attacks on Iran's nuclear facilities in recent years and has killed many top nuclear scientists and military officials in cowardly strikes. More recently, on May 22nd, Colonel Hassan Sayyad Khodai was assassinated by two motorcyclists who shot him 5 times before fleeing the scene. He was dismounting his car to enter his home in an eastern neighborhood of the Iranian capital when 3 bullets hit him in the head and 2 bullets in the hand. While Israel has yet to officially comment on the incident or take blame, all reports and facts indicated that it has so far been behind the terrorist activities in Iran. Regarding the Khodai case, American outlet The New York Times cited an intelligence official as saying that Israel has informed American officials that it was behind the assassination. Despite all this, the regime continues its petty attempts of trying to accuse Iran of destabilizing the region.
Israel attacks its neighbors on almost a daily basis, for example, bombing Syria, whereas Iran has not attacked a neighboring country in over 300 years, or almost 300 years. Furthermore, the very well-known international human rights organizations, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, as well as B'Tselem, the Israeli human rights organization, have deemed Israel to be an apartheid state, which inherently, as such, destabilizes the region. So there's nothing new here in terms of the Israeli and American narrative, their propaganda regarding Iran. What I do see as new and heartening is the fact that the effectiveness of this narrative is weakening very rapidly.
Israeli atrocities have also garnered fierce response from Iranian officials. The chief commander of the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps has warned that Iran will take a harsh revenge on those who assassinated a member of the force in Tehran.
The commander of the Iranian Army's ground force has warned that Tehran will raise Tel Aviv and Haifa if Israel makes any attempts against Tehran. Brigadier General Qumars Haydari also stated that Israeli occupied territories will be liberated in less than 25 years.
That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
It is said nearly 70% of the world's protein comes from animal sources. While the plant-based trend is popular for the time being, meat is here to stay. Protein is also a brain food, vital for neurological and other bodily functions. Moreover, globally, the relationship between humans and livestock is fascinating. It has transcended time and space. Yet despite all the world's technological and scientific accomplishments, mankind has failed to replicate livestock's exact contributions to food, clothing, and even energy.
Hello there, and welcome to the second segment in our two-part edition of Bazaar. Last week, we discussed the knowledge-based production of potatoes in agriculture and how technology has helped expand this sector. This week, the program focuses on livestock rearing and all that goes into producing high-quality meat and dairy. Yum, yum. So stay with us as we check out their economic and national food security contributions.
Last time, we visited Khazai Agricultural and Livestock Breeding Complex and explored their agricultural and cultivation units. This time, we will look at their advanced animal husbandry divisions and what led them to livestock rearing. To begin with, it all starts from the soil. Over time, the ground needs constant enrichment for high-yield harvests. After this company shifted to knowledge-based potato cultivation, it realized the best way to prepare the farmlands for the next round of planting was to employ the help of sheep. This company has around 2,400 hectares of farmland, and fertilizing this much land becomes a mammoth task. So, it decided to bring in the heavyweights of the fertilizing sector and started its cattle breeding unit. And as a result, it also launched its animal feed production facility, where they scientifically formulate feed and test ingredients for the best quality. As the cows are allowed to roam the lands periodically and are fed high-quality food, the dairy and meat they produce are also very nutritious. They have thousands of Holstein cattle at their rearing unit, and the milk produced is rigorously tested.
Typically, livestock is fitted with digital tags. This is the animal's profile, which can be modified or added according to the animal's examination. They also serve as an identity card so caretakers can keep track of each animal's health and other features. This is also important information for veterinarians and the animal's products, which are further examined in advanced labs.
Each animal born or brought to the facility is given a digital tag after a lab examination. This company's advanced veterinary and genetic lab complex carries out essential functions. It's worth mentioning that one of its labs is mainly dedicated to testing cows and their milk. Here, milk is tested for its microbial load. This usually involves a standard plate count, which determines the total number of bacteria in a sample. These results are then used to determine the grade of milk. It might be interesting to know that this company has received numerous awards for being the best model cattle breeder in the province and the country. These titles were granted based on meeting nearly 40 standards of the Ministry of Agriculture. Such achievements were made possible by dozens of expert staff employed at this company. Its other laboratory is dedicated to raising sheep. At this facility, sheep are genetically selected for specific characteristics. They are also genetically bred to produce twins and sometimes triplets. This company has never stopped eyeing the future. It plans to expand its facilities further while incorporating new technology and applying the latest science to increase the quality of its products.
In 2019 was considered the golden period for red meat production in the country. Since then, production has grown each year, primarily because of the removal of an export ban. 3 years ago, Iran imported large amounts of meat to supply domestic needs, while domestic meat production was operating at full capacity. The ban was implemented to stabilize the market and support local production.
Iran's Livestock Exporters National Assembly estimates domestic needs for red meat at around 60 million heads of light livestock annually. Last year, this number was 72 million, which is well above average. This meant 12 million light livestock were ready for culling and exports. The Ministry of Agriculture puts red meat's domestic per capita consumption at over 12 kilograms, with lamb being the most popular red meat. This year, the National Statistical Center, or SCI, reported red meat production stood at nearly 51,000 tons in the month of May alone. Based on the SCI figures, over 1.3 million livestock holding farms are spread across the country. 54% of these farm small livestock and 26% are dedicated to large livestock husbandry. The remaining 20% farms both large and small livestock. The meat industry in Iran is worth some $2 billion. But not all livestock are raised for meat. They are also reared for their milk. Based on the SCI, Iran annually produces nearly 9 million tons of raw milk. 70% of this amount is produced on industrial farms, and the rest comes from traditional dairy farms. Going off of figures from Iran's Customs Administration, on average, roughly 800,000 tons of raw milk are exported annually, valued at around $800 million. All things considered, Iran's livestock industry is booming and is an excellent place for investors who will see quick returns and profit. Khorasan Razavi province specializes in livestock rearing and potato cultivation. Khozai is a family business handed down to four generations over the years. It has some 2,400 hectares of farmland where saffron, Mohammadi roses, potatoes and wheat are cultivated. This company has spent years perfecting a cultivation system using its own agrotechi, enabling it to enhance the performance of mini tubers. So what is a mini tuber? They are the first generation of nuclear miniature seed potatoes. These can be engineered to have disease-free characteristics and are bred to shorten field cycles, leading to high harvest yields of healthy potatoes. The beating heart of this company is its research and development department. This is where production actually begins. This company has several varieties of potatoes in in vitro tissue culture form that are subject to rigorous disease testing. This ensures the company starts cultivation with the highest quality tissue cultures. After lab tests, the plant material is transferred to hydroponic greenhouses and later taken to the field for mass production.
You might be wondering why some farmers choose hydroponic methods over others. It's a solace system where roots are kept in a dark environment saturated with an aerosol of nutrient-rich solution. This way, cultivators can observe the entire plant structure and strictly control production phases. Plus, this high-tech method gives cultivators unique insight into specific plant characteristics that can assist with field production.
As we mentioned earlier, this company also specializes in raising sheep and cows for meat and dairy production. It's interesting to know how potato production led to livestock rearing. The founder and director of the company shares his experience with us. After the mini tubes are raised in greenhouses, a portion of them is stored in refrigerated rooms for later use. Other storage facilities hold potato seeds and harvested products, which are later released into the market. It is no surprise that this company has received three consecutive national awards for being a top producer of livestock and agricultural products. Much of its success is attributed to a large amount of science and knowledge used for production. This company employs expert staff and researchers who also play a significant role in the company's dynamic progress. As part of its future vision, this company is eyeing expansion. It is already working on launching a botany clinic and other food-related laboratories. This company takes a great deal of pride in its socially responsible productions. It has spent decades trying to optimize its use of natural resources and make organic and nutritious products.
The company we just mentioned is just one example of how the agricultural industry is expanding with the help of modern technology. Iran produces tons of agricultural products annually, which it also exports to destinations abroad. The food industry is also heavily dependent on this sector as it plays a critical role in the country's food security and
national economy.
Iran has a total area of 165 million hectares of land. Of this amount, 50 million hectares are arable farmlands. Moreover, some 21,000 hectares are dedicated to greenhouse farming. Iran's agriculture makes up around 8% of the national GDP. Plus, it employs one-fifth of the country's entire workforce. The country's agro-food products also accounted for around 20% of the country's non-oil exports in 2020. Data from Iran's Customs Administration shows that Iran exported over $800 million worth of agricultural products from April through May this year. Additionally, figures showed over 1.7 million tons of these products were sold to foreign markets during that period. Around half of the revenue generated from exports belonged to 10 major agricultural products. Championing the top of the export list were pistachios. This was followed by watermelon and tomatoes in terms of export value. Horticulture, aquaculture, and livestock products also raked in millions in foreign exchange. Industry analysts say there has been a relative decline in exports compared to the same two-month period last year. They say more attention should be given to marketing, better packaging, and transportation to boost agricultural exports. The Chamber of Commerce, Industries, Mines, and Agriculture also released a report examining the relative decline in agricultural products. The report showed a less than average rainfall coupled with misuse of natural resources in farming practices are two of the major culprits of reduced production. Mining is the process of extracting valuable materials from the Earth's crust. It is one of the oldest industries and dates back to prehistoric times when people first mined flint to make tools and weapons. However, mining has come a long way from its traditional methods to incorporate advanced material science and geology. Moreover, modern mining wouldn't be the same without its heavy-duty machines to extract and haul material for processing. On the whole, this sector is one of the largest and most productive industries the world has ever known.
We are going to take a look at Iran's mining industry while shining the spotlight on zinc dust production. We wanted to see how this stuff is made and where it's used. Plus, we will explore this sector's contributions to the national economy.
To better understand the most recent developments in the mining industry, we visited Zarin Rui Caspian. It is a subsidiary of the parent company Zarin Industrial Mining Group and specializes in making zinc dust. Products at this company come in the form of bluish-gray zinc powder or granules. These products are made with specific formulations depending on their end use. In short, these items are produced when purified zinc vapors are condensed. But this requires a large amount of processing, starting with melting zinc crucibles. Next, the molten zinc is transferred to a vaporizing furnace. The vapors are then sent to a condenser to form zinc dust by circulating the gas through a cyclone cooler. Most zinc dust production plants include a vertical crucible melting and vaporizing furnace and a condenser, which operate on a fluid and continuous basis. That's why this production company works around the clock without breaks. Now you might be wondering where zinc powder is used. Due to its unique characteristics, it is a sacrificing element that helps prevent corrosion. Meaning it works well in absorbing moisture and strengthening metal surfaces against oxidation. It is a perfect substance for coating industrial machines that withstand harsh climatic conditions.
So many processes are at work when it comes to mining. There is exploration, extraction, and refining of raw material, just to name a few. But activities don't end there. Usually, there are mega holding companies in the mining sector with several subsidiaries, such as the company we just mentioned. These subsidiaries are essential in expanding and completing mining-based products' supply chains.
An asset to corporations is their research and development departments. This is because they carry out activities leading to technological development. That is to say, they develop new services or products and improve existing ones while elevating the company's industrial standing. This department also performs critical quality control checks where standards are also implemented. And indeed, standards are everything, especially for foreign trade. One of this company's competitive advantages is its high purity products based on national and international needs. This company also purchases most of its raw materials from domestic suppliers. Among its services, it can formulate zinc powders based on special orders from customers. It also provides its customers flexible delivery, whether by sea, air, or ground. This producer has never stopped looking to the future. It plans to increase its current market share and create new products that can be used in other down-the-line industries. This company has achieved many successes despite being relatively recently established. But that's not to say it has not faced many challenges along the way. One such challenge has been maintaining its machines, which sometimes require spare parts for repairs.
Well, I'm going to go into a several-minute silence because my good friend and colleague is out there on the field to give you guys a wonderful report. Take it away.
In a world grappling with coronavirus, a significant number of health-related companies have been looking for a solution to contain the spread of the virus. With the development of various testing methods, there has been a huge spike in demand for the virus sampling kits, and especially the sampling swabs.
God, I'm just so very tired of wearing masks. But what can I say? Ever since the pandemic took the world by storm, our life has changed in an unpredictable way. One of the prominent changes is the development of sampling technology to meet the evolving need of COVID-19 testing. Today, we came to Damahi Biotechnology Company to see how the sampling swabs that we see everywhere are produced. So don't go anywhere. Stay with me.
At the start of the outbreak, most of the sampling swabs were imported into the country and the domestic supply chain had been inconsistent. For this reason, this Iranian company in biotechnology decided to take steps towards promoting local sampling swabs on a large scale. When it comes to production, the swabs are produced in two different forms, oral swabs and nasal swabs. Anyway, let's take a look at the production line.
All right, the production process of the sampling swabs begins in this unit. At this stage, after the plastic handles are imported into this factory, they go through the swab flocking machine to form the header. Actually, when I look at it, it kind of looks like the ear cleaning swabs that we use on a day-to-day basis. But in fact, they are completely different. These headers are actually made of fibers, so it's totally something else. When the swabs are produced, they get to this stage for quality control and cleaning before they get to the packing hall. And finally, they pass through the sealer machine for pressing. But I should mention that the swabs are not finalized at this stage. They have to go through the sterilization process, and by the end of the day, the sterilized swabs are transported to different laboratories all across the country.
In case you wonder about the head of the swab, unlike how we thought earlier that it looks like the ear cleaning swab, The foam-headed material eliminates the possibility of adhesive residue contamination. So by the end, the sterilized sampling swabs are distributed for field or home testing to meet the growing need of the country. Even though it looks very simple, the production procedure of the sampling swabs is very complicated. Now, thanks to the development of such diagnostic tools, the world has managed to curb the pandemic in numerous ways. I've been Sarah Dema. Stay safe and bye-bye.
Many thanks for that. Fantastic adventure. We are almost out of time, but before we go, let's look at some news and trends in the country's agricultural industry. Here we go now. Drought is a serious issue affecting global food security as the world tries to grapple with the effects of climate change and overall global warming. Iran is also dealing with low rainfall as some of its provinces are sounding drought alarms. This is bad.
Lorestan province is one that's heavily impacted by declining seasonal rainfall. Officials say its agricultural sector has witnessed over $360 million in damages, with livestock and aquaculture suffering the most considerable losses. In addition, Iran's Chamber of Commerce, Industries, Mines and Agriculture recently released a report on the falling precipitation levels. The report lists several provinces in a critical state of water shortage, including Fars, Khorasan-Razavi, and Ardabil, among others. Official estimates revealed the agriculture sector was inflicted with $2.4 billion in losses due to water shortages last year.
Venezuela is looking for ways to cooperate with Iran to strengthen the Latin American country's agriculture sector. Let's have a look.
During a visit to Iran, Venezuela's agriculture and land minister said his country is interested in transferring advanced know-how and technology from Iran. Wilma Castro Solteldo says these mainly lay in Iran's fields of fertilizer production, biological pesticides, livestock probiotics, and aquatic animals. Soteldo added that his ministry intends to boost cooperation with Iranian knowledge-based companies to bring change to Venezuela's agriculture sector. Venezuela is a top producer of corn, coffee, cotton, and rice, among other things.
In terms of value, pistachios still wear the crown at the top of Iran's export list. And last year, around 140,000 tons of these nuts were sent off to foreign markets. Very popular they are indeed.
Nearly $1 billion worth of pistachios were purchased by 75 countries from Iran. Fresh and unprocessed pistachios were the most sought after, raking in $700 million. China, Russia, India, and the UAE were the top destinations for this agricultural product. Iran's Customs Administration, however, says exports declined last year compared to the year 2020. The administration said drought and damage to domestic pistachio productions last year caused a 30% drop in both weight and value of these exports.
Let's hope something can be done about this drought business. Anyway, that wraps up our program for today. Don't forget to leave us your feedback. Thank you so much for tuning in. I have been Samson Sees. Sees you in the next Bazaar.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
the keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. My name is Sheikh Zaid Al Salami. A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatih Al Hayat, written by Ayatollah Al-Uzma Al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. So when we're talking about nature, and we're talking about honouring the environment, we're talking about cleaning and respecting our neighbourhood, we're talking about how we are able to become more practical in our proactive understanding of contributing to making the world better, making our earth more friendly as far as the nature is concerned, and really becoming, as I just said, friends of nature. And when we look at the ahadith from Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, we can understand that in numerous ways, in different angles, you know, from different sides. You know, we can understand it from the side of israf, we can understand it from the side of amana, we can understand it from the side of khalifatullah fil ard. We can understand it from different angles, but it all contributes to that one important goal and objective that we need to have, and that is that we be good in preserving what it is that is around us, because we are going to benefit. If I keep the environment clean, I will benefit. If I stay away from wasting, I will benefit. If I make sure that, you know, if I do cut down a tree, I plant other trees, I will benefit. And all these other things that I'm very sure my dear brothers and sisters already know about. So there's no need for me to, you know, speak to you about, you know, what the benefit of having trees are, or what the dangers of, you know, ruining an ecosystem is. And all these other things, I'm very sure everyone knows about them. But I think another thing, which is exactly why Ayatollah Sheikh Jawadi Amuli mentions this in the last chapter of this part, is that when we respect these things, when we honor these things, when we expand on the natural kind of environment around us, and we plant trees, and we have more forests and parks and all these other things, it's going to generate a lot of good results that we will benefit from. Financially, we can benefit from tourism when people are going to be visiting this natural park. As far as us visiting nature, you know, when we are reconnecting back with nature, you know, قُلْ سِيرُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ, the Quran says, go out and see the earth and see how other civilizations were before you, and have a look at the history of these areas, you know. And there are many verses that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala mentioned in this regard. قُلْ سِيرُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ فَانْظُرُوا كَيْفَ بَدَأَ الْخَلْقِ أَفَلَمْ يَسِيرُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ فَتَكُونَ لَهُمْ قُلُوبٌ يَعْقِلُونَ بِهَا أَوْ آذَانٌ يَسْمَعُونَ بِهَا. So when you are going to be benefiting from nature, when you are going to be benefiting from the skills that you acquire when you engage with nature, when you're camping, when you are learning how to build a shelter, when you learn how to start a small fire to heat yourself or to cook with, and all these other good things, you know, it's all a part of nature. When you destroy that, you're going to be living in concrete. You won't have those pleasures of these things anymore. And that's why there are many financial benefits as well.
Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli, the author of the book Mafatih Al Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes.
یه جلدش هی مفاتیح الجنان است چه فرون دماغ قصاب داره فرون روزون
است. One volume, the present volume, مفاتیح الجنان, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش کم داره و اون اینه که فرون درخت کاری اینجا کم ثواب داره, دعا هم داره, ثواب هم داره.
But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام اونطوری که اینو گفته بودم گفته دی اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره, همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری میگه ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
When you're reading about the history of, for example, this ancient civilization, which is a part of nature, which has now become molded itself and become a part of nature, from a tourist perspective, many financial gains as well. Important thing, I think, here in this discussion is when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he says, and this is why the verse says, قُلْ سِيرُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ فَانْظُرُوا كَيْفَ كَانَ عَاقِبَةُ الَّذِينَ مِنْ قَبْلِ. Go out and see the earth. See the earth and find out how was the outcome, how was the ending of those civilizations before you. And there are two verses in that regard as well. Contributing, we spoke about that. We spoke about being a part of nature. And we also spoke in previous episodes about not isolating yourself. And that's an important point that is mentioned here from hadith from Amir al-Mu'mineen, from Uthman ibn Mad'un radiyallahu ta'ala anhu, who said in regards to how religion wants you to be a part of nature, wants you to be a part of society, doesn't want you to become isolated and secluded. جاء عثمان بن مضعون إلى رسول الله صلى الله عليه وآله فقال يا رسول الله أو رسول الله قد غلبني حديث النفس ولم أحدث شيئا حتى استأمرتك قال بما حدثتك نفسك يا عثمان قال هممت أن أسيح في الأرض. He says, this is what he's saying. He came to Rasulullah صلى الله عليه وآله and he said, oh Rasulullah, I feel like secluding myself. And of course I don't do anything unless I want to speak with you. And of course, Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, what is it that your nafs is telling you to do? He said, hamamtu an asiha fil ard. Then he said, I want to go out and live in the nature. You know, I want to live by myself. I want to live a monastic life, for example, all by myself. And then Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, he said, فَلَا تَسِحْ فِي الْأَرْضِ فَإِنَّ سِيَاحَةُ أُمَّتِي الْمَسَاجِدِ. Don't go off and live all alone in earth or in nature, because seeing nature or visiting or siyaha, tourism, whatever we want to translate this word as, فَلَا تَسِحْ فِي الْأَرْضِ فَإِنَّ سِيَاحَةُ أُمَّتِي. The siyaha of my ummah is in masajid. When we're talking about this, we mean that, as I said, isolating yourself from society is very, very bad.
Driving past, walking fast, to the field of dreams, hear the children scream.
There Was the Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio.
Coming up is the news.